The sicha that we're going to learn today is from Chelek Yud Gimel. It's the first sicha from Parshas Matos. We know that Rashi's system in explaining the Torah is to explain any word or group of words that is difficult to understand in the Torah. And if there's something difficult that Rashi does not explain, that means that in Rashi's opinion, it is not something that is very difficult to understand, or Rashi already explained it earlier, and therefore Rashi doesn't need to come and explain it to us. This idea is supported from the fact that in several places, Rashi tells us that there is something that he finds problematic, but he doesn't know what it's coming to teach us. Obviously, his intention is to explain every single thing that needs explanation. Otherwise, he wouldn't have to mention a question that he doesn't know, seemingly doesn't know the answer for. This is a Rashi Sicha that's going to explain why Rashi doesn't comment on a seemingly questionable pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Matos. Parshas Matos begins with Parshas Nedarim, the topic discussing oaths, specifically oaths that a woman makes. If a girl makes the oath when she's living in her father's home, he can restrain her from taking that oath. Similarly, if she's married, her husband can restrain her from taking an oath. We are going to look at the beginning of this topic where Moshe says to the Roshei Matos, the Rashei Matos, the heads of the tribes, and Moshe tells them in Pasuk Gimel, Ish ki yidor neder laHashem, if a man makes an oath to Hashem, oy hishava shavua, or he makes a promise, leesor isor al nafshoy, to prevent something, to make something prohibited for his soul, loy yachel dvaroy, he should not violate his words, don't retract on his oath. Kachol hayetze mipiv yase. Whatever he said, he should do. And this is the way the Torah opens up the topic about nedarim, about oaths. At the conclusion of these 17 psukim that discuss nedarim in the beginning of Parshas Matos, Moshe concludes the topic by saying, Eile hachukim asher tziva Hashem es Moshe, or I should say the Torah concludes by saying, these are the laws that Hashem commanded Moshe, bein ish l'ishtoi, concerning a man and his wife, bein ov levitoi, and between a father and his daughter, b'nu'oreha beis aviha, in her youth when she's in her father's home. The question is about this concluding pasuk, pasuk yud zayin, in Perek Lamed, where the Torah concludes by telling us these are the laws about a woman and her father, a woman and her husband. It doesn't seem to be an adequate summary to conclude the topic. It seems like this pasuk should have said these are the laws about a person who takes an oath, and that a person who takes an oath needs to fulfill their oath. And specifically, this is talking about ish l'ishtoi of levitoi. Standing alone to conclude this topic by saying these are the laws about a man and his wife, a father and his daughter, doesn't seem to really give us a good summary, a good idea of what the topic is about. After all, the topic is about oaths and a person keeping or having the ability not to keep their oath. So again, the question that the Ben Chamesh LeMikra would seemingly have about this pasuk is why doesn't the summarizing pasuk say these are the laws about keeping an oath, specifically when it comes to a wife and her husband, a daughter and her father. Now it's interesting to note that the pasuk here says, this conclusionary pasuk, the one that we're questioning, and And the pasuk that Rashi doesn't comment on says these are the chukim. Now we know that a choik is a super rational mitzvah, a mitzvah that doesn't have a reason. And seemingly the psukim here are talking about keeping an oath, especially pasuk gimel, that says that if a person takes an oath, they need to keep that oath. Well, that certainly is not a choik. In fact, the pasuk itself says that a person should not profane their word. That is a very logical reason for keeping an oath. Lo yachal devaroi. So why would this be considered a choik? Now, yes, the details in this topic, the fact that a father could reverse his daughter's oath and a husband could reverse his wife's oath, these laws are not given, we're not given a reason for why a father could reverse his daughter's oath, why a husband could reverse his wife's oath, and they may be considered in the category of chukim, but still, why doesn't the Torah summarize the topics of oaths by including all of the aspects of vows? Namely, that you need to keep your vow. That would not be considered a choik. And specifically, the laws about a father and his daughter, a husband and his wife. On this conclusionary pasuk, Rashi does not comment. Rashi does not ask our question about why the Torah doesn't repeat the fact that a person should keep their oaths. And therefore, Rashi must think that this is self-explanatory and we don't need to ask a question about this pasuk that summarizes Parshas Nedarim, the topic about oaths. In Ois Beis, the Rebbe tells us that this mitzvah that seems to be stated in Pasuk Gimel, that a person who swears should keep their oath, we don't really need a mitzvah right here to come and tell us that a person needs to keep their oath, because this was stated so many times already in the Torah before Parshas Matos. The Torah tells us, Midbar Sheker Tirchok, a person should stay away from lying. And that would seem to include within it the fact that if a person makes an oath, they need to keep their words. And there's even more specific examples about oaths. For example, Yaakov Avinu made an oath on his way to Haran. He said, the Torah tells us, Vayidar Yaakov Nedar Lemar. Yaakov made an oath saying, if Hashem will be with me and he will guard me on my way upon which I am going, and he will give me bread to eat and a garment to wear, and if I return in peace to my father's house, and if Hashem will be my God, then this stone which I have placed as a monument shall be a house of Hashem, and everything you give me, I will tithe. Later on, before Yaakov is leaving Lavan's house, he has a dream in which Hashem tells him, I am the God of Bezkel, where you anointed a monument and you made a vow. Now arise and go forth from this land and return to the land of your birth. There Rashi comments on the words that Hashem says, and you made for me a vow, and explains, and you must pay it up, for you said it will be a house of Hashem, that you will offer sacrifices there. So here Hashem is holding Yaakov accountable for making an oath and saying that this stone is going to be a house of Hashem and you're going to bring up karbanos. And Hashem is saying, you made an oath, now you need to fulfill that oath that you made. Additionally, there are many other places in the Torah before this parsha, Parshas Matos, where we talk about Nedarim, that discusses oaths. Like, for example, when the Torah talks about somebody making an oath to bring a karban in Parshas Vayikra or Parshas Emor. And there the Torah doesn't even mention the essential rule that a person needs to keep his oath. It just talks about the details of fulfilling the vow. For example, in Parshas Bechukosai, the Torah tells us, Dabar el b'nei Yisrael v'amart aleihem, Ish ki yafli neder be'erkacha nafshais l'Hashem. Speak to Bnei Yisrael and tell them when a person makes a vow pledging the value of lives to Hashem. There again, the Torah doesn't tell us that a person needs to keep their vow. It just goes on to tell us the value of each person and how a person could fulfill their vow of giving the value of a person. In Parshas Nosoi, the Torah tells us that when a person makes an oath to be a Nazir, exactly what they should do. The Torah doesn't say they need to keep their oath to be a Nazir, it just tells us the detailed laws of being a Nazir. Similarly, three Parshias earlier, in Parshas Chukas, the Torah tells us, Vayidar Yisrael neder l'Hashem, Vayomer, Im Noson titein es ha'om hazeh biyadi, Vecharamti es areihem. Bnei Yisrael made a vow to Hashem and said, if you deliver these people into my hands, I will consecrate their cities. And the Bnei Yisrael fulfilled their promise, meaning even before this topic was taught, it is known that you have to keep your vow. Since there are so many references to vows before Parshas Nedarim, the topic that we begin with in Parshas Matos, we must say that when the Torah tells us at the beginning of Parshas Matos that a person shouldn't profane their word and what they promised they should keep, the Torah isn't telling us this as a new rule, as it is seemingly telling us, but it's merely an introduction to what comes next. It's as if the Torah is saying, it's known the essential rule that whatever you vow, you need to keep. But here are some new laws about vows that a young woman makes when she is living in her father's house or when she is married. And therefore, at the end of the topic, when the Torah is summarizing what new laws the Torah is teaching us here, it isn't necessary to restate the obvious rule that a person should keep their vows, and that's why the Rashi doesn't even question why the Torah doesn't restate the rule that a person needs to keep their vows at the end of the topic in Pasuk Yud Zayin. The Torah just summarizes that these are the specific rules that apply to a woman and her husband and a woman and her father. Now that we understand the main point of Parshas Nedarim, which is to tell us how the rules about a woman's vow, we can also understand better the Rashi in the beginning of this topic, the second Parsha in Parshas Nedarim, where the Torah tells us, Vayedaber Moshe el Rashi Hamatos l'bnei Yisrael le'mor, Ze hadavar asher tzivar Hashem. Again, we said this earlier, Moshe spoke to the head of the tribes of Bnei Yisrael, saying, this is a thing that Hashem has commanded. Now Rashi questions, why does Moshe only tell this to Rashi Matos, the head of the tribes? And Rashi says, Chola kavod l'nesiim, l'lamdem t'chila v'achar kach l'chol b'nei Yisrael. Moshe honored the Nesiim, the heads of the tribes, by teaching them these halachas first. And only afterwards did Moshe tell it to the rest of Bnei Yisrael. Then Rashi concludes, Uma ra l'amra kan. And why is it, why did the Torah see it fit to mention it here? Lame to teach us, Sha'aparas Nedarim b'yachid mumche, that the annulment of vows may be performed by a single expert. Vim ein yachid mumcha, and if there's no single expert, ma'per b'shloisha hadyaitim, three laymen can annul the vow. Meaning these Roshe Matos, these Nesiim, they were definitely mumchaim, they were experts. And the Torah is telling us that these people, these type of people, they are the ones who could annul the vow, could annul a vow, and single-handedly. And therefore, Moshe tells it to them, and the Torah tells us that Moshe is telling it to them first because they are connected to the vow. The question that we could ask about this Rashi is, yes, we can see from the Lashon of the Pasuk there's a special connection between vows and the Roshei Matos, the head of the tribe, since they were singled out and taught the laws first. But still, how does Rashi infer from the Pasuk that the heads of the tribes have the special power to annul the oath? But in light of what we explained earlier, that this whole topic is being taught to teach us about the annulment of a vow of a girl if she's married, before she's married and after she's married, and the ability to reverse her oaths. Therefore, the fact that this topic was said to the head of the tribes must be to hint to us this particular ability to reverse an oath, and that was what was relevant to them. In Ois Dalet, the Rebbe tells us that the fact that the reversal and annulment of vows is connected to the Rosh Matois, the head of the tribes, can also be understood bepnimius ha'inyonim in a deeper way. It says in the Talmud Yerushalmi about oaths, isn't it enough that the Torah made certain things forbidden? Now you want to forbid more things upon yourself? So the Yerushalmi is seemingly looking in, at people that are taking vows upon themselves to prohibit more than the Torah has already prohibited in a negative light. Why does the Talmud Yerushalmi say this? Because the intention of doing Torah mitzvahs is to make a dir b'tachtoinim. And to do this, we need to be involved in Gashmias, not to separate ourselves from Gashmias through taking oaths and promises that will separate us from more Gashmias than the Torah already mandates. So seemingly, taking an oath is not fulfilling our intention and directive of making a dir b'tachtoinim, elevating all of the Gashmias that the Torah allows us to be involved with. Yet, on the other hand, the Mishnah teaches us in Pirkei Avos, Nedorim Siag Leprishus. Vows are a safety fence for abstinence. That oaths help us fulfill the mitzvah of Kadesh Es Atzmecha B'Mutar Lach, meaning separating ourselves from the things that are permissible to us, helping us not to indulge or become addicted to the pleasures in life that are allowed. These two pieces of advice from the Rishalmi and from the Mishnah seem to contradict each other. The way to reconcile them is to understand the difference between them. The first advice from the Rishalmi saying, isn't it enough what Torah forbids, don't add to it, is referring to situations where refraining from physical involvement would, when physical involvement would prevent you from elevating the physical world. Meaning that the Gashmias is pulling a person away from their mission, their focus in doing Torah mitzvahs with the Gashmias. In this case, Let me take that back. The Yerushalmi that's looking at making additional oaths in a negative light is referring to a situation where a person's lack of physical involvement would prevent them from elevating the physical world. Meaning if they make these additional oaths, they're not going to be able to utilize that materialistic involvement in a positive way. So let's say, for example, they say, I am never going to have ice cream again. Oh, that's limiting their ability to make a bracha on the ice cream, to gain whatever positivity they could from that ice cream. And that's a chaval, it's a shame that they have now taken themselves away from this physical activity that they could have used and elevated. But by contrast, when a person's involvement in the physical world are not upright, they're not healthy, they're becoming dysfunctional, and we have reason to suspect that their involvement in the material world is pulling them down, then they should follow the advice of the Mishnah, Nedorim Siag Leprishus, that vows are a safety fence for abstinence, and they should separate themselves from that involvement in Gashmias, even though the Torah allows it, because they know that in this area they're not able to elevate it. To the contrary, the materialistic element is pulling them down, and therefore they need to refrain from it. So from this, it's understood that the ultimate goal is to uplift ourselves to a level in which we could nullify vows and be involved in elevating the physical world. Since the Torah alludes to the fact that there is an element of vows that's connected to a mumcha, an expert, because of his elevated stature, it's understood that if he is elevated to a higher level, then his role is not to upkeep a vow, but to reverse the vow, to annul the vow, because the expert who is higher can uplift a person, can uplift the person who made the vow so that he or she reaches a level that they don't need a vow at all, because the involvement in materialism is no longer pulling them away from their mission, but to the contrary, their involvement in materialism could help them and allow them to uplift the materialism and make a dir b'tachtonim. In Ois Hey, the Rebbe tells us, now that we see that this entire section is not so much about the importance of keeping a person's word and vow, but about annulling and reversing vows, we can also understand why this topic is taught to the Yidden right before they entered Eretz Yisrael. The difference between life in the desert and life in Eretz Yisrael is that in the desert, the Jews did not need to be involved in Gashmias. They were fed from the mon, they drank water from the well of Miriam, and they didn't have to worry about their clothes because their clothes grew with them. By contrast, in Eretz Yisrael, they would have to plant and plow. And yet this was the ultimate purpose, to make a dir b'tachtonim by their involvement in the Gashmias world and their Gashmias upkeep in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, when they are ready to enter Eretz Yisrael and begin their work of elevating the Gashmias, they needed to learn the rules of reversing vows, because the content of this topic is essentially about becoming further involved in Gashmias. In Ois Vav, the Rebbe tells us that in the beginning of this topic of Parshas Nedarim, we are still told about, we're still reminded that a person needs to keep their vow, which we said before, is the Torah reiterating something that we already know, that your person needs to keep their vow, in order to introduce this law about a woman before she's married and after she's married and the ability to annul her vow. And yet still in the introduction in Pasuk Gimel, the Torah tells us, lo yachol devaroi, don't profane your word. So we must say that even this introductory pasuk gimel that tells us that we should keep our vows has an important message to the Yidden as they're about to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Although the literal meaning is not to profane our words, another message in this pasuk, lo yachal devaroi, is that our matters in the material world, we should be careful, lo yachol, not to profane. Meaning, don't make our devoroi, our involvement, our activities in the material world, yachol, mundane. But by contrast, to make sure that our devarov is going to always be holy. This lesson that's taught to us at the very onset of the topic is relevant to everybody, even for people that are not reversing their vows. So again, Pasuk Gimel is making a general statement. Everybody should try to make sure that their activities are not mundane, but instead that their activities, their regular activities, are uplifted and holy. And this applies to everybody. And then it goes on to talk about people that are at the level where they could actually reverse their vow because they don't need to stay away from Gashmias. Now, how is it that everybody is able to lo yachol devaroi, to make sure that his mundane activities are not, that his activities are not mundane but are holy? Well, the Torah tells us at the very end in this conclusion, in this pasuk that concludes the entire topic, Bein ish le'ishtoi, bein ov levitoi, bein oreha be'saviha. Because this topic is about a man and his wife, a father and her daughter. And what this means, bepnimis hanyonim, is that every single Jew is an ishtoy of Hashem, a wife of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a bitoy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a daughter of Hashem. And since this is who we are, this is our core identity, therefore everybody, even those people who are not at the level of reversing their vows and being fully invested in all of the materialistic opportunities in the world without holding back, but every single person as the daughter and wife of Hashem has the ability to make all of their activities holy and fulfill Hashem's will of making a dira b'tachtoinim.